episode 231. You guys know that when we have guests on, you're in for a treat. They're the best episodes that we do. This one is nothing short of an all-timer. This was an absolutely fantastic hour plus with the one and only Kevin Casper. We get into a lot of stuff here, and he's an absolutely insane human. This is a treat, guys. Just sit back, relax. You know what to do. Let's have a day.
Welcome back, Washed Up Walk-Ons fans, episode 231 of the podcast. And we've really outdone ourselves today with the guest who has agreed to come on this podcast with us. We do not deserve his presence, but we are blessed by one of the most elite athletes I've ever met in my entire life. Somebody who humbled me in 1 hour in a way that almost nobody has been able to in my entire life. Somebody I think that has alien genes, whose muscles are made out of vibranium, literally maybe the world's fittest human. We're going to find out maybe some of his secrets on this podcast, and hopefully some of our listeners can then become more fit and more beastly, because Kevin Casper is an absolute Iowa legend and somebody who has my utmost respect. Absolute pleasure to have you on the podcast, man, and look forward to this conversation.
Yeah, what's up, fellas? You guys doing good? I like that. Oh, man, that was pretty cool.
Yeah, Drake always does it up for the intro. He's pretty good at those. And I'm not sure it even did you justice, Kevin. I mean, gosh, damn it. You're all over Twitter, Instagram. I think a little bit of Iowa Nation has recently caught on to that with a couple of the post-workout picks. You look like The Rock, dude. Basically, maybe not as quite as beefy, but more lean for sure. And you're 43 years old?
Yeah, in regular years, I'm 43.
Okay. What in non-regular years? What are you, about 22?
I stay about 21.
But here's the thing, though. Here's the thing is I'm 26, and by most accounts, by most people, I'm a good athlete. So I'm a good 26-year-old athlete, and I got put to fucking shame by this 43-year-old. To the point where I forgot to add this in the intro, and now I'm mad at myself, so I'm going to put it here. I also want to include that he's one of the most frightening human beings on earth, because what makes somebody frightening and dangerous is your inability to make them tired, because fatigue makes a pussy out of anybody. And the last dude tired is the last dude to die. And like, he would have killed me flat out, stuck a knife in my chest right there on his basketball court if he wanted to, because I couldn't have done anything about it, man. I had Prowler flu, and he was laughing at me recording it so he could send it to Coach Woods, man. Like,
yeah, I was laughing with you, though. You weren't laughing, but I wasn't laughing at you. You know that saying? I don't even know exactly.
Yeah, no, I can appreciate it.
As you were in a fetal position and vomiting, and I was recording you, I was doing that in Hawkeye Love. So that's the best way I can say it.
I'm really curious, Kevin. Clearly fitness is a large part of your life, and I'd love to hear more on, I mean, already the mindset of real years versus what you actually consider yourself. How do you view longevity and what's capable as you get older, and how have you approached that as you've gone from actually 21 years old 20 years ago to now?
Honestly, fitness, working out has kind of always been part of my life. Even when I was a kid, I'd be in the basement. I'd ask my dad, can you get a pull-up bar? So he went and made a pull-up bar. So I started doing that, and I was, push-up phenom. And I always wanted to, the records, when you're in grade school, there's you get 22 pull-ups and you're the champion of the thing, and like one of those things, and I just wanted to be number one. So then I wanted to push up, I wanted to sit up, I wanted to pull up. And that was just something that drove me even as a kid. And I've kind of always just been, I guess, part of fitness. And I know you get older, it kind of sucks, but I don't feel it. So I just keep, working hard. And there's something, I don't know what it is, but I love the competition aspect. Like my biggest challenge is always myself. Like when I'm trying to push myself and doing that, I think that's always the toughest challenge that I get. And, but I don't know. I really enjoy it. And when my legs, that lactic acid, you guys know when Doyle would, you know, have us doing the stuff where the lactic acid threshold is killing you and you feel like you're getting sick. And that's what I love. I love that feeling. And people are always like, oh, that's so weird, but I really enjoy it. And when I'm working out with somebody, I know how I feel. So then I'm picturing how they feel. And that excites me. So that's one of those things where, you know, it's like seeing the blood in the water, sharks, that whole thing too. You know, it's something that I really enjoy doing. So I trained with a lot of people. I wasn't going against Drake. I was training with him. So like people that I go against, I'm not the guy. I'll never go, oh, I'm a better workouter than you. There's no such thing. I can't stand it. So I'm not a big CrossFit guy sometimes, like the professional workouters. You know, I don't do that, but I like to accept the challenge. And I've had a lot of people recently, I'm not going to get into it, but a guy trying to get in the NFL kind of started clowning me about being a little bit older. And then, cause he wanted me to train him. And I said, I'll train with you. And, he didn't last very long, about 30 plus minutes, but I was a dick to him. I got him out real quick. Cause, just to prove a point that he should have just kept his mouth and just taught him. But, it didn't work that way. So that's a funny story though.
That's so a lot of that, obviously physical. Wow. I have so many questions. You're talking to two big fitness guys, two big fitness guys in our own right. We do our own stuff. And I'm actually a CrossFit guy, Kevin. So,
yeah, I don't knock it. I just don't like it. You know, okay. That's
no, I feel you.
Yeah. I mean, the reason I don't, this is why, because I don't know. It's just some things that like, they just don't stop. People that do CrossFit just don't stop talking about CrossFit. And I just believe there's so many different ways to train, and CrossFit does a good job in that. But, you know, I like to have 100 different ways to train as opposed to just one kind of philosophy. And they frown upon things that if they don't like it or something, that's why, that's kind of what I was saying about CrossFit.
Yeah, so. No, nothing's 100% perfect for sure. And I don't think that's a smart way to do it anyway. If you can kind of vary your training, it's going to, your body's going to adapt better in the long run anyway.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A lot of what you talked about there was not physical, but it was mental. And I'm curious, was the mental killer mindset, blood in the water, always there? Or was that something that you forged at? Did Iowa play a part in that, Coach Doyle and those summer workouts?
No, each part of my life, honestly, has played a part. My dad, even my mom was my soccer coach as a kid. So, you know, and both me and my dad, he coached me in baseball and football, like just pretty much every sport I played, he would kind of go and coach me. And he was a surgeon, so he didn't play in the NFL or do anything, but he always was just, hey, do your best in everything and push yourself. And it's one of those things that I liked to do that. And, Iowa, obviously that Chris Doyle, for me, everybody has different experiences. I love the guy. I still talk to him. And I had a great experience with him. And for myself, he really did teach me even another level of, mental toughness, being a walk-on, you know, that whole story, being a walk-on, it was a little bit, I guess more challenging than going in and, you know, having a scholarship and everybody loving you right away. And there were no stars in my name or anything like that. So I had to work a little bit harder. And I've had plenty of times that I spoke with him and talked to him and just said, hey, you know, coach would tell me, you got to work harder than everybody. You got to push yourself harder than everybody. So I really took that to heart. And I think Iowa definitely took me to, you know, another place mentally and physically, which was awesome. And Doyle had a lot to do with it. Mm-hmm.
Was the chip in the shoulder always there? With that walk-on mentality?
Yeah, it still is. It bothers me to this day, which which is dumb because it's like, it's so long ago. But even when I'm working out now, there's times where I actually picture myself, again, it's kind of weird. I don't tell a lot of people, but I picture myself driving to Valparaiso and Milliken and Drake and, I mean, you name a school, there is Loras College, and then, you know, with my dad, and then having them say, we don't either want you or we don't need you, or we're just, you know, we're not interested or whatever it is. So some of those things, I play a lot of mind games with myself mm-hmm. when I'm working things. And that's some of the things that pop up in my head while I'm, you know, while I'm pushing myself and while I'm working out. And, you know, while I'm on the, I'm on a Peloton and there's 58,000 or 148,000 or whatever it is people. So the people are beating me, I'm picturing them like, okay, you know, what have they done to succeed, or what did they do to, you know, what did they have to sacrifice or whatever to get to where they are? So in my mind, I start playing mind games. I pick out the person, I picture what they would maybe look like, even though there's no avatar or picture of them. And then I push myself that way. So, I guess that's one of the driving things that goes on in my head when I'm working out. Mm-hmm.
Drake, what do you do similar stuff? I do similar stuff.
To be honest, jiu-jitsu does a really good job of making you stay within the moment and think about exactly what you're doing and not about how tired you are.
Let's go. Drake told me. So Kevin, Drake
no, told I don't, me. I will go back to. I don't want to interrupt.
No, you're good.
No, he can finish.
My older brother does jiu-jitsu. I told him, and I'm telling you, I have so much damn respect for him. Look, I'd have to get you really tired before I can put you in arm bar, Drake. I wouldn't want to do it when I introduce myself to you.
That's fair. That's fair, because the training does help a lot.
I learned that you don't F with the right, you know, the wrong people. So I definitely would try to prowler you to death before I try to do something jiu-jitsu to you.
I was just going to say, since he came over and did prowlers, you might have to roll out with him to the gym and get on the mat.
Listen, man, I know the guys at my gym would love to have him. If I just brought Casp in, they'd be like, who the fuck is this guy?
Yeah, I'm sure. You mentioned the Peloton and people beating you. You sent me and Drake both the screenshots of your post workout stats. There really aren't a whole lot of guys that beat you.
Yeah, no, there's not. But I'll tell you what, it's very humbling, because I do it a lot of times after my workouts. And I mean, Monday I did 64.1 miles, and that was with, I also did prowlers and then backward sleds and upper body. So I did a lot of stuff, and I very rarely take first. And that's, again, that's kind of humbling. I did see that up to 10% of beaters too. So I look at that. There's a way to go into the bike, and, you know, some scientific guy would do that and cheat, but it makes no sense. But so some of those people that beat me, I don't even think are real. So that makes me feel a little bit better, but I just love the way I have to push myself to even compete and be in the top 10 or top 20 of 100,000 people after workouts and stuff like that. So that's what I enjoy.
That's impressive. It's so impressive. And
like CrossFit, I was really against the Peloton.
right.
I was like, dude, these people are so annoying. You see the commercials, and I'm like, oh God. But then during the quarantine, I'm a big mountain biker. So I would always go 3 years with Brian Urlacher, one of the guys that we are biking on a daily basis. And
Urlacher bought him the sickest bike of all time.
It's sick. Yeah. It's really nice. It's really cool. But there's, so we would go to mountains, but during quarantine, everybody started walking outside because mm-hmm. it was nice. And then when I'm going 30, 40, 51 miles an hour with my tops, going down mountains, all of a sudden you got 19 people and kids and home from school. And eventually I was like, all right, I got to start doing something else. And that's when I started Peloton. And that's, it's hard, man.
Yeah.
And now I'm not.
Let me ask you this for real.
Yeah. If I did cross, guys, I would love it too. I'm sure I would.
Don't you get into a real road race? Just like open enroll some random pro road race and smoke the field and just be like, yeah, this is what a real athlete looks like.
You know, this is what's hard. So I've asked to be on a number of, there's mountain bike teams here, which is, there's a lot because in Arizona, and they travel around. The problem is I've heard a lot where people bump into you and I'm sure you guys feel the same way. If you're driving with, say, 40 or 50 people and you get bumped in, I'm focusing on not winning anymore. I'm focusing on trying to take this dude out and then probably try to take his family out. And I'm going to be really, really pissed. And then that would suck. And I thought about that a bunch because they're like, oh, dude, you get run over. And he's like, and one of the guys that asked me about it said he got taken out with the dude kind of cheap shot and broke his collarbone. And I'm like, well, what do you do? He's like, well, I got surgery. I'm like, no, to the guy. And he was gone. I mean, he broke his thing and the guy kept on going and you got 50 people on a mountain. And that's, I'm not really that much of a people person to the point where when you're doing the competition aspect of it. So
God, you sound like Drake so much.
God, I was so pumped that entire time you were talking. I was like, keep going.
Cass would enter a race and then end up in fucking prison. Killed someone. Kevin, I checked my phone. It says it's 110 in Phoenix right now and you're sitting outside. Are you hot, dude?
Dude, it's so nice. So I'm I like to be outside. And I don't know, like my favorite when it's about like 110, like I worked out earlier today, my buddy, we are outside at the club right in my neighborhood and I wear a hoodie 99% of the time, wear a Hawkeye hoodie and just sweat and work out. And I love the heat. Mm-hmm. When it's 10 degrees, that's when my body starts shutting down and my back hurts. I broke my neck. I broke my back, my shoulder, all that stuff. My body starts to feel like crap. But when it's 110 with the dry heat, don't care. I love it. Yeah, it's nice. And then I'll jump in the pool like after workouts and stuff. Yep. Like that. Go on to the pool every, here and there. And
absolutely.
To be honest, it's not a huge surprise to see how successful and how much of an up and coming athlete your son is, seeing the genetics that he comes from and the setup that he has at his disposal. Like you just got the every kid's dream for a setup.
I mean, that
it's fun. Yeah. What we made this house for, for the kids and, to get workout area. And we put a 40 yard turf area, the basketball hoops and another workout, that one that we worked out in. I love it because then the kids have fun. We have fun doing it. And I mean, Kyler and the other two, my daughter, Aaliyah, she's a stud. And then Braylon, same thing. He's 12, but he's going to be. But it's for us, it's been fun because they work hard. I can't force a kid, to become an athlete. I can't force a kid to work or I can push them and I can do some stuff. But at the end of the day, it's going to be up to them. And that's where Kyler has adapted to that. My oldest one, they all have. But I'm talking about Kyler right now. He was 7 years old being in a training facility that my wife owned in Illinois after I got done playing. And so he was always around NFL athletes and college athletes and kind of seeing these workouts. And shoot, he was 7, 8 years old beating kids in like quick feet and stuff. And when the other kids were in high school. So it kind of gave him, a lot of confidence. And then from there, he's just a hard worker. I'm sure you saw, I posted that stuff on Twitter yesterday. He went out. He hooped for about 2+ hours and then decided to do a dunk contest. It was at like 55,000 views. Social media is crazy.
Confirm that was for 10 feet.
Yeah. You know what? I'll tell you what. So it's 10 feet. It's EOF.
That's what I told everybody.
Five fitness. The thing is, he's 6'5¼" and he can jump. You talked about it on the other podcast. So when he gets on the Vertimax, I don't know if I can read, this is, 10 feet. He gets on the Vertimax and you know what a Vertimax is and dunks with the Vertimax. He trains his
Vertimax
ass.
Vert dunk.
Yeah. Yeah. So he does the Vertimax at 10 feet dunking. And I mean, he trains. So somebody on Twitter, it's some guys are like, oh, he makes it look like it's 8 feet or makes it look like it's 9 or 10 or whatever. But then some guy decided, hey, I love you, bro, but that's not 10 feet. So right away, I can't get mad at every single person because there's a bunch of haters and like crap like that. So I just want to delete them. I don't know what else I can do besides that. I'm not going to get in an argument with every goddamn person that talks like him. But yeah, that's annoying. But yeah, it's 10 feet. It's 10 feet and he can freaking jump. But here's the Vertimax. I don't know how to turn. This is my first Zoom call. so I don't know how to turn the thing away.
I know we're breaking ground with you. That's that's the Vertimax. We did it all the time still in, you know.
Yeah, that's the Vertimax. We got the
jugs.
This the jug machine and this is Drake's favorite thing right here. Where's that? The Prowler.
The Prowler.
Yeah.
But here's the thing though, is that
we have a nice little setup for the kids to work out. You know, there's playing, but then there's also you gotta work your ass off if you want to get to the level that my son is at, or I mean I'm the second best in my own. It's crazy. Like funny story about my younger brother was here, and then Kyler wanted to play me in basketball. So I'm not dumb. I'm not going to play him in basketball. He would dunk all over me. And the only way I can literally win is if I used to cut block everybody when I played. I'd have to cut block every single play. And since this is my own son, I'm not going to do that. So what we did is I decided to play pool basketball so I can drown him and wrestle him. And so I beat him in that 7-2, and he was mad about it, but he's not gonna beat me in pool basketball, but I'm not dummy. I'm not gonna get on the actual real court with him. But the kid's a freak athlete. But he works. He works really hard, and so do my other two. But he's been working, and he's it's a different story for me from me being walk on nobody, and him is four star, and like every third day we have some type of college contact him, and it's a different definitely different.
I have a lot of questions about that. The first one, going back a little bit, is how did you facilitate the hard work mentality? Because kids these days, and I just said that, it sounds like I'm 40 years old, but kids these days, a lot of them don't want to work hard. Like they want the fame without any of the hard work, the busting their ass. When Kyler was 3, 4, 5 growing up, how did you facilitate the balance between pushing them in the right direction, obviously with your knowledge and your background, but not being too overbearing? Like you said, you can't force them to do anything. What was that balance like as a parent?
I think it was good because the best thing is, so he had a group of, basically it was a group of four kids. I was coaching them when they were 7 years old. Run around, and then finally they put heads and the helmets on their bobbleheads. But these kids that he was working out with in Illinois and training with and being friends with, and they all kind of had the same mindset, and they actually fed off each other for competing. I'll name Tyler Morris, just committed to Michigan. Reggie Florima they offered from Iowa too. But Tyler Morris to Michigan, Reggie Florima to Northwestern, and then Caden Cobb was our quarterback. He committed to Ball State. So that was like four horsemen that I've got pictures when they're 6 years old, 7 years old, 8, 9, all the way through. So it was kind of cool. And just somehow, and for some reason, all of them end up being like just stud athletes, which is kind of cool, but they all worked really hard and they pushed each other. So that kind of made my job a little bit easier to, hey, let's go work out today. So they would push each other. And then Kyler seeing, I guess, a lot of my friends or, college guys or, just different people and seeing the success that, hey, I got an opportunity to go play in the NFL. And for him, I mean, he was 7, 8, 9 years old and maybe even earlier than that. What are you going to do? Well, I'll probably play in the NFL and then do something after. I'll either coach or open up a training facility. So it's kind of been a thing that he's just, mine was a dream where his is like, this is what I'm going to do. And because of that, I've done a pretty good job. This is one thing I have been good at is trying to keep him as a walk-on mentality, which is the exact opposite of a walk-on. But the mentality that I have helped me get to the, walk-on and break records at Iowa and break records at the NFL Combine. And then also, play 8 years in the National Football League. And it's always like, you're always going to get cut. You're always going to, somebody's going to outwork you. And so that's why I explained to my kids, hey, there's somebody. And I was just named states. I'm like in Georgia and Atlanta and Florida and this, that. They're like, they're outworking you today. So you say that and you want them to have that walk-on mentality. Like, hey, I got to work hard on everybody or else they're going to end up kicking me off the team. And I've kind of done that for, I guess, his entire life. So he does have a special work ethic. The only difference, he's 6'5 1/4. 197 pounds as of yesterday, and he's a freak athlete. And And the good thing is I never
And his blood runs black and gold, right?
What's that?
His blood runs black and gold, right?
It runs black and gold because my wife and I both, yeah. See, for my
there's a shitload more colors that are trying to make his blood turn a little different. Yeah, there's
a lot of black and gold all around him. But you know, what was cool. I never forced him. At any point did I ever say, you got to play football. Mm-hmm. He was a really good lacrosse player, which is crazy because now he had to use his left hand so much on lacrosse. So he's so good at catching with his left hand, better than I ever was. I can always catch one-handed with my right hand pretty good, but left to struggle. He's ambidextrous. So yeah. When he gets up, I mean, last year he was only varsity player on the highest level, 6A, to start in football and also start in basketball because he can go left. He can shoot with his left. So all this stuff is just because we started him just getting into everything. He played about 2 days of soccer, hated it. So that was it. And then played baseball. I coached third base for a season. I couldn't wait till it was over. Like, I was so happy. I was like, Dad, I don't want to play baseball ever again. I was like, okay, nothing against baseball. Just boring. But yeah, so he kind of done everything. So my job, I guess, was pretty easy. Just, hey, you got to work hard. You got to compete on a daily basis. And just, I don't know. And then seeing me, that's the one thing, like if you're a complete fat ass and you're telling your kids, you got to eat healthy. Well, dude, look in the mirror a little bit. And, yeah. And so that's why probably the biggest thing besides having a daughter someday when she starts dating and stuff, I got to make sure I'm in shape. But I always, you know, I want to be a good role model for them. And they see me working out. They think I'm crazy. So I don't, you know, as far as my workouts going and stuff, but I don't care. That's good for them to see my mentality and sit and kind of see what I had to do to kind of get to the next level and now see what they're doing.
Imagine the 16-year-old dude who is about to meet his new girlfriend's dad for the first time. She's like, listen, you know, my dad, he's a little bit of an intimidating guy at times. And the 16-year-old's like, yeah, whatever. I'll see you at 8. And then he shows up the door and hears Casp and the kid shits right there on his porch. No. And then the date's over because the kid needs to go home and clean himself up.
Casp tells his daughter to go inside. The kid has to put the workout clothes on and they go do prowlers before the date.
That would be the best idea right there.
That's fucking
my,
unreal.
My daughter is a tough SOB. She's very independent, which is awesome. And she doesn't, and I was always kind of a little bit nervous to have a girl and now have my daughter where there's not a lot of peer pressure with, I got to look like this or I got to dress like this or do, she doesn't really give a shit, which I think I've helped with that mentality and my wife, you know, so she's the same way. She didn't try to fit in with all the NFL wives where it's like everybody had Louis Vuitton, everything. Like, no, I'm good. I'm from small town, Iowa. So we never had that. And so she kind of beats, you know, their own drum. What the hell is this? I'm drawing blanks with all these saying, beat by the own drum type of thing. So that's what my daughter does too. So it's, she's pretty badass. So I'm not worried. I think she can take care of herself, which is pretty cool.
I think so too. Is your wife an ex-athlete as well?
She was you can't say cheerleader because she was a competitive cheerleader. So, okay. But now she's an athlete because she's like a workout phenom. She loves to stay in shape. She loves to be in better shape than everybody. And just, you know, I'm not as necessarily obnoxious as I am with some of the stuff, but she's every day, that's just part of her routine. And she's a stud.
So are you guys competitive with each other?
No. I mean, we'll work out here and there together, but different she stuff. Doesn't really necessarily want to work out with me. And so we're not, I mean, we'll play pool and stuff like that. I can be annoying if I'm winning. I try not to be with, you know, with my own wife, but, and I can be annoying if I lose them too. But like, well, last year we played pickleball on our basketball court, their pickleball thing. And so we played two ex-NFL athletes, Clay Harbor and Pat Schiller. And then Lisa and I won. She says I didn't really let her touch the ball too much because pickleball, I was thinking every ball is my ball. Right. But she actually did really good. And we beat We beat best of three. Well, Clay Harbor is now known for the Vassar, right? So he played 8 years in the NFL. Now he's known for being on the Vassar. But yeah, so they are down at the house, and we beat the hell out of them, and it was kind of cool. So when we compete together, it's fun.
So Kyler's obviously getting all the recruiting and the attention right now. Your daughter is your middle child?
Yeah, she's 15. Yeah, 15.
15, and then your younger son is 12.
12, yeah.
Hard to guess and predict, but is Kyler the best athlete? Or we've talked to some people who are like, he's no. good, but the younger one's going to be even better. Is that the same for you?
What's crazy is this, man. He did a little video type of thing where on Twitter of just him running routes, and I posted like it was nothing. And next thing you know, college coaches, high school coaches, here you can go anywhere. So every high school coach, hey, can you come here? The kid is a route technician like I've never seen. And you can see that on my Twitter? K
Casper Hawk 87.
K Casper Hawk, everything's always ends in 87. I had to switch my phone thing because everybody guessed like to pick up my phone, they press 8787. I'm like, oh. So it's K Casper Hawk 87 and yeah, so like he posted it, and I mean I have colleges all over the place. Like, dude, how old is this kid? And he's a route technician. So as far as routes and better athlete, at 12 years old, Braylon, the younger one, would have beat Kyler in pretty much everything.
Wow.
Except play lacrosse. But I don't know. Everybody's at how tall is he gonna be? I don't know. I didn't know Kyler's gonna be 6'5". I'm 6 foot and a little bit. So I have no idea how tall he's gonna be, but I do know that kid is a freaking workaholic, and just a freak with how he does things, and just being a perfectionist and a route technician. And it's pretty awesome watching him.
That's incredible. What was that?
No, I said I don't know what's gonna happen, who's gonna be the best athlete attended. But we'll see.
So going back to you a little bit, Burr Ridge, Illinois.
Yeah.
Hinsdale South High School. You were not 6'5". You did not have offers from USC, UCLA, Iowa, everybody in the country like Kyler's going to eventually have. How did the Iowa connection, how did that end up? How did Kevin Casper end up in Iowa City?
So I was at Hinsdale South High School. My coach, Jim Kerwin, played defensive back at University of Illinois. And he always had belief in me, like, hey, I think you can play. I was, long story short, I don't want to get too long with the story, but like I was a quarterback. I always thought I'd be a professional quarterback. Growing up, I thought I was going to be a professional athlete, but soccer. I figured I'd be in like Europe or something like that. Because that's so I just assumed I was going to do that. Then freshman year, I got beat out, and my freshman year of high school, I got put on the B team, and that sucked. Like a lot of kids, it was a big high school, Hinsdale South, biggest one. And, we were 8A or whatever. So I got put on the B team, a lot of kids that got put on the B team, quit and stuff. That just drove me to work a little bit harder and not a little bit, work like way harder than everybody. So eventually towards the end of the year, I got put on the A team, but not quarterback. Sophomore year, I tried to be a quarterback again, broke my thumb, end up being starting running back, and all these little things happened. Where then I broke my fibula as a running back, but I still played through it. But they moved me the last two games of my junior year as a receiver. And I'm like, well, I'm never going to get the ball, which I did in my junior year. My senior year, I broke literally every record in playoff. Our first time going to playoff game and playoffs in forever. So had 9 catches and broke every literally record that you can have had. But still, nobody looked at me. I mean, it was frustrating. Like I said, pretty much after every game Friday night, my dad and I would drive like all those schools. It was Milliken, it was Loras, it was Valparaiso, it was Dayton of Ohio, the Flyers. Milliken is what I was like, oh, this is kind of cool, because they actually showed me a little bit of love. They're like, you might play, you maybe can play here. And that was Milliken University or University Mountain, I don't even know what it's called anymore. But then I went to Eastern Illinois, and that was like my bigger school. And they said, we actually possibility have a walk-on spot, not preferred, but to be a kicker. And I said, is there any way I can, because I was a kicker, soccer player. I said, is there any way I can play receiver, get opportunity? They said, we don't let our kickers play. So from there, Chuck Long, everybody knows Chuck Long, played you know, superstar at Iowa, obviously quarterback. He came down. He was actually looking at three other guys, our opposite receiver, who exactly 1/4 of the catches me, couldn't beat me in anything, whether it's pickleball. Yeah, I don't know pickleball was back then, but he wouldn't beat me in that, or ball of basketball or soccer, tennis, or freaking chess. And he had 1/4 the catches, and the goddamn guy, they're looking at him and not me. And then they're looking at our left tackle and our right guard. And so my coach did say, like, hey, you know, if you give this kid an opportunity, I'm telling you, he'll make it happen. So they watched me work out. Chuck Long watched me work out in the basement of Hinsdale South. He did say, hey, if we let you, if we give you an opportunity to walk on, would you take it? And I said, coach, if you give me an opportunity to walk on, I promise you I'll lead the all-time leading receiver. Way past, many years later, after Northwestern, I broke the, I guess, the reception record. And he was at, I think, Oklahoma at the time, but he had my email, which is Kay Kasper, you know, that's, so he had my email and he emailed me about, you know, hey, do you remember when you were in the basement and I asked you and you said you were going to break? I'm like, holy crap. That was probably the coolest thing I ever received from anybody. You know, when he remembered it, cause I did, that was a driving force. And, but it was frustrating. It was really frustrating back then to be a walk-on. You don't, now they change the rules, which is nice. You get to eat with your own teammates. And I mean, I would be out there practicing, busting my ass. And then we go at that time was Hillcrest where we ate. All my teammates would go to the left and then I'd go to the right with all the regular students. Hey, they'd have good food.
We know how it feels, man. We know how it feels.
Yeah. Well, did it change for you as far as,
so
I know I didn't get the same perks. I didn't get crap.
Yeah. So it did get better. It did get better. Yeah. We did get to eat with the scholarship guys. But it was almost worse because you would walk in, everybody in the same line, and the scholarship guys would just skirt right through. And the walk-on guys had to scan their ID card for the $4.25 meal and just pay for it. It was like almost insulting.
I would just be frustrated because, you know, you're eating and those were fun times. I would sneak in. I would always give, if I saw the person, it was like a newer person or something, I'd pretend I was somebody else that knew wasn't going to be there, my name, me off. So I snuck in enough, but that was a lot of, it was fun to go and hang out and kind of shoot the shit and, you know, talk crap about, you know, the practice or coaches or whatever it is. And, you know, talk about class and girls or whatever. And I didn't get to do that 99% of the time. When I did get to do it, it was just, again, a driving force. So I literally would take back then, metric shakes and go shakes and stuff. I would take a bunch of stuff and go back to my dorm and I'd work out. And I was, cause I'd be so, my roommate had a scholarship, so he wasn't there. So I'd go in my own dorm and just work out and I'd be pissed. And I walked around pissed and, you know, I got in fights in practice all the time, you know, with Tom Knight and Flaz Atkins, Matt Bowen's my favorite. Matt's one of my, good friends. And he's one of the guys I really respect. And he kind of taught me, like, dude, you fight in practice, but then afterwards, because I wanted to fight him in the locker room. And, you know, I remember going and looking for him and found out he's butt naked in the shower. And I'm like, I don't care. And then it's like, oh, wait, that would be like really, really weird if I'm sitting there trying to fight a dude butt naked in the shower. And so he actually sat me down at one point. He's like, dude, you're competitive. I'm competitive. We're going to fight. I'm a cheap, because he's the biggest cheap shot asshole ever. But I loved it. And so I learned, like, you let it go after practice is done, you kind of let it go. So I learned a lot, you know, a lot from him, you know, as far as that goes. But yeah, it was challenging to be a walk-on. And as you guys know, that's what the name of, well, all three watched a walk-ons right here. Yeah, it was challenging. But for me, again, it just drove me. And then from there, just, you know, it was, we had some tough years, but I had 3 years with the legendary Hayden Fry, which was awesome. And then 2 years with, you know, a young strapping Coach Ferentz, and he's still, it's crazy that he's still there. And one of the most surreal moments is when just a few weeks ago, and Kyler and I are in his office, we're talking for an hour plus. And, you know, just knowing that he was my coach, he was my leader, my mentor. And then having him talk to Kyler 21 years later is just like, geez, this is nuts.
What does that actually feel like though? Because I can't even imagine it.
It was really, really awesome. The thing that kind of hit me is when so me, Jerry Montgomery, who's, you know, the Green Bay Packers, was my own teammate, at Hawkeyes, and one of my good friends and my wife's friends with or his wife and family friends, whatnot. But when we're in the locker room and Jaden, his son, who committed to Iowa, and then Kyler, they put on the uniforms, like we looked at each other and smiled, and then we fist bumped each other, and then we're like, oh shit, like this is crazy. And then and seeing Kyler in a uniform, that was probably the coolest moment ever. And then just sitting there with Coach Ferentz, though, like, holy crap. I mean, it's one thing, you know, being a coach, and you guys know, I mean, he's great coach and all that stuff. And he's such a great man that's what I love about him. That's what people, not every fan, you start 0-2 last year, and he actually talked about this, but you start 0-2 and everybody wants his head. Oh, he's no good. He's washed up. He's getting too old, this, that. Then they win 6 in a row. He's always been the same, whether you're 0-2 or when they were 12-0, he always had that same demeanor. And he's such a good family man and a good leader and a good person. And I was fortunate. I was the first, my senior year, I was captain, me and LeVar Woods and I. So we would go on these little puddle jumper planes where they literally spin the propeller to fly away. And we would fly to Chicago. And so it would just be Coach Ferentz, LeVar and I, like knee to knee with one pilot. And we got to know each other, and we didn't X's and O's in football. And that's what, even when I talked with Kyler, we talked a little bit about football, but we talked about life and what he wants. The biggest thing I can respect of him and a lot of Hawkeye fans in general, you know, for Kyler, hey, we love to see him black and gold and Iowa this, that, but we want the best for him. And that's exactly what Coach said too. And for me, that means a lot, because he does. He cares about his players and their family to him, and I love the dude, man. He's more than a coach for me. You know, that father figure and mentor and just an awesome guy.
That's about as heartwarming as it gets. I mean, that's emotional just hearing it, and I'm sure it was for you just to be a part of it. So then eventually you play, we're going to come back around to that, because obviously the people who are sending me messages on Twitter, they're like, hey, wouldn't it be awesome if you could get Kevin Casper's son to commit to the Hawks on your podcast, man? Like, that would be so awesome. I was like, dude, are you fucking kidding me? Like, that's not going to happen. Anyway, you eventually play, you break the record for receptions, you become a guy, you become one of the guys, you go into the league, you have a Super Bowl ring, correct?
Yeah.
Was there any point during that progression, and you can talk about that as well, that whole journey, but was there any point where you step aside and you're like, okay, I've done something here. Like, I'm proud of, like, I've worked my ass off. I've had this mentality, this underdog, this chip on the shoulder, the walk-on mentality. And like, now I'm standing on top of the world, a Super Bowl champ with Tom Brady, right?
Yeah, that was 2004. We beat the Eagles and we were in Jacksonville. And the only thing then we won, and the whole weekend was, or the whole week was awesome. Just the media day, and then getting all the helicopters taking us to practice and shutting down. It was just a weird, you know, having the whole entire hotel, this nice, unbelievable hotel just for the players. And I mean, all that stuff was just so cool. But as soon as we won, getting my dad, who's been, you know, he's been my guy. He's been the person I talk to literally 7 days a week still to this day. And my mom, but she wasn't there. She was at my mom was watching Kyler at that time, you know. But getting them on the field, that's like what I was the coolest moment. I didn't think about like, oh, I'm gonna get a ring and all that. My both my brothers, biggest fans, supporters, and all that. Getting them on the field and kind of celebrating and then going to the afterwards, Snoop Dogg threw a party in the hotel. So we were up with my dad till like literally 6 in the morning and flew out.
Holy shit.
Yeah, I was. But my brothers and, you know, seeing the guy, I mean, seeing name dropping here, but the Black Eyed Peas and the Will Smiths and like all these guys like in there like, oh, this is pretty badass. And I was just so happy that my brothers got to, you know, see all this and experience it. But honestly, I never even thought about, oh, I made it type of thing until, I mean, probably a few years ago. Because I just wanted to keep playing, and then I broke my neck my 8th year, and that's when I kind of went downhill where I wasn't allowed to go back and play. It was The bones did something. I'm not a doctor. My brother's a doctor. That's why I just pretend I'm a doctor once in a while. But the bones didn't like fuse together or some crap like that. So it was a chance where I can get my little one, the 12-year-old, about five or six days after he was born is when I broke my neck. So my wife was like, no, you're not going back. And so that was that. Did about 8 months of recovery, rehab. And then from there, it's like, okay, what do I do now? You know, that type of thing. So I never really sat back and was like, that was really, really cool. Now I know how hard it was because everybody in every kid, I'm coaching Kyler when he was seven, every single kid in the whole organization, if I talk to him, or every high school kid at your high school at Iowa, their dream that they put on a helmet. Hey, what would be your, ideal dream? Or if you say, hey, how many people would like to play in the NFL? Every kid raises their hand. And then I realized, like, man, there's so few people that get the opportunity. We see so many in Iowa because it's like, this guy goes and that guy goes. It's kind of nuts. But in a whole, it's like, geez, there's not many people. The percentage is so stupid low, and it's that hard. And so then I started thinking, I was kind of get proud of myself a little bit. Like, I had to do a lot of shit to get there, which was kind of fun.
That's cool. Yeah. That's insane. Yeah, that's wild. Those injuries had to be difficult to deal with, especially physically, because you were such a guy who was so about fitness and working out that whole time. Like, was that difficult mentally to pull back?
You know, it was crazy. So I was so in tune with my body and stretching and prehabbing, the prehab before the rehab type of thing. But all these years, I was 30 years old. I got done when I broke my neck when I was 30, but I never had tweaked any, like every player, I hurt my groin. I tweaked my hamstring. I never did because I took care of myself so well in that aspect of it. But when you're doing kick returns and a wedge where they banned wedges and kick returns and they banned, now they moved it back five yards. I mean, my broken neck, my broken back, my broken ribs, my shoulder, every one of them was on kick return. So when guys like LeVar Woods, because I played when I was with the Broncos, he actually was like, yeah, Casper, like joking with me. I was laying on the ground after getting hit and I fractured two of my ribs and it was awful. And I couldn't breathe. And he's like joking with me and like laying on top, like I said, laying on top of me because he was a Cardinal, I was Broncos. And I'm like, God damn. But all those injuries weren't something that like I could have, if I tweaked my hamstring, that's my fault. That's what I always thought. Like everybody else, I'm like, well, dude, this is like your ninth hamstring you tweaked this training camp. Like, what the hell is wrong with you? I always kind of thought that way, like pulling this muscle, that muscle. I never did. But a lot of those injuries, when it's full speed, a helmet to your rib, a helmet to your, I didn't really wear shoulder pads. I mean, they were shoulder pads, but like junior high shoulder pads, and didn't wear pads on my legs and hip pads. I mean, I had hip pointers that were awful. Helmet to the hip, and all of a sudden you're pregnant on one side, which is called a hip pointer, and it was getting shot up. I took probably, I bet 40 to 50 toradol shots when I played.
Oh my God.
And I had to take a toradol shot before almost every game with pop burst sacs in my elbows and my shoulders. And I mean, so when I had my AC joint in my shoulder, I played 16 games with a torn AC joint, and they told me I'll have surgery at the end of the season. That is fucking awful. I couldn't drive. I can practice and play because I'd be, I'd have a lot of drugs in me to be able to help me play. Drugs as in like Vicodin and Toradol and like stuff like that and shots that shoot me up before games. So I was able to play, but then I couldn't drive and I couldn't sleep. My wife would have to drive me around and then I'd end up sleeping, in a chair and because I was in so much pain. And so that like that's the part that people, they turn on Saturday games or Sunday, and when they're yelling at somebody fumbles in Iowa or somebody missed a tackle or drops the ball, all the shit that you go through and all that crap. And then in college, you still got to worry about algebra class and geometry. So it makes me, I wish there was a job that I can just sit there on Twitter. And if anybody does, I just go or punch in the face, say fuck off and then go and leave. And then not the best job ever, because like stuff like that drives me nuts when they don't see what we as an athletes and the guys that from Spencer to every you know, Reganey's out there running, Tracy, all these guys, you know, busting their ass. I'm talking to them because I just saw them a few weeks ago when I was in Iowa. But like those guys, they bust their ass and they're still student athletes. And yeah, it's a grind, man. It's tough. It's a straight business. So I do like this whole payment for the kids. That's on another, the NIL thing. That thing is awesome.
And I want to get to that in a second, because your son is going to be, he's kind of in the conversation of like guys who that would actually affect, unlike.
He's going to make a couple of dollars.
There's some money to be made. So you, real quick, you undoubtedly feel better body-wise right now than you did at the end of your career, no doubt.
At the end of my career, yeah, because that was the whole broken neck and back. The problem is, one of the main reasons, if not the main reason, I moved to Arizona. It's every so I was spent a lot of times in the emergency room actually in Illinois when it would get really cold out. My body would actually shut down from my the tears, the disc tears in my back, and like all these little things that would happen. It would get really cold and I couldn't function. There's Halloweens that I'm just laying on the ground. And I can't trick or treat with the kids because I'm literally laying on the ground. Like I can't get up. So there's been some weird things. And it was always when it starts switching to the cold weather. And definitely Arizona has helped me help my body as far as that aspect of it. And then just, you know, working out the way I kind of want to and eating the way I eat really healthy. I still eat Skittles and Nerds and Reese's. And
I'm very curious about your diet.
Yeah. So I wake up this. Pretty much just my diet every day. Work out, do everything. And about usually around between 12 and 12:30, 1 o'clock is usually my first meal.
So you're fasting.
I don't keto. I hate when people, they'll say, what do you follow diet wise? I'm like, I follow my diet. I don't have a diet because I eat a lot of bacon and fat. I eat tons of fat. Probably more than anybody, but I don't eat carbohydrates very much at all. But I have my shake with, geez, there's from super beets to vegetables, to blueberries, all natural stuff, honey, peanut butter, whey protein, like all these, a lot of collagen. So like that's kind of what my first meal is. And throughout the day, I just eat healthy, a lot of nuts. And my wife is a really good cook and she always makes like, she's gluten free, not by choice. I'm more by choice, but she's gluten free because like bothers her stomach, whatever. Mm-hmm. So I pretty much eat gluten free almost all the time. So
what do you like? You eat a lot of meat?
Yeah, I do. Yeah. Like steak, beef, chicken, pork. I have a buddy that goes to North Dakota and shoots, I don't even know, like deer, venison, you know, yep. Shoot all types of stuff and brings me back like fresh meat, which I you know, like that. When me and Urlacher, we fish, I bring 60 plus pounds of fish back. And then 60 pounds is a lot. They dry ice it or whatever and freeze it and send it. So then you have a lot of fish, alligator, like random stuff like that. And but a lot of meat. I just don't eat the breads and empty carbohydrates like, I guess, like breads and crackers. And
ice cream.
See, I like ice cream. So I don't like we go to like Froyo, the TC, not TCBY, but like those type of things. Mm-hmm. And I load up Reese's, Kit Kats, and all that. So I like that stuff. And we go to movies. I don't like to buy $15 bags of a stuff. So we go to Walgreens and buy $15 and have like 6,000 candies. Yep. So, you know, so we go there and bring them in. And like, I don't, by no means am I like, I don't eat ever sugar or this, that, and the other. I just eat for the most part, my workouts combined with how I eat healthy. It makes me feel good.
Yeah, I just, that's such a, God, I wish more people would just fucking figure it out. I do health and fitness coaching and nutrition stuff with clients. Yeah. And like, it's just like, if people from the time they're in college to the time they get to 40 or 50, if they just stayed on it, both workouts and and nutrition wise, and ate like you just kind of described, it wouldn't be such a far-fetched idea to look great and to feel great, but people.
It's so much easier though to like make excuses than to actually do it.
Oh yeah.
Like, I'm too busy or too tired. I travel. Well, shit. Just because you travel doesn't mean you need to have a bag of Cheetos on the plane. Like you don't need to have that. And it's just so easy to make excuses about everything, about I don't want to work out today. I want to, you know, like, and that's kind of a lot, like you're saying, the softness of kids and stuff.
Yep.
It's true. You know, it is true. So then when the people do have that workout type mentality that just want to bust their ass type thing, those are the guys that become more successful. But yeah, I do the same thing. I wish people would eat healthier and work out and stop making so many goddamn excuses and just freaking, you know, take care of business and they'll live longer and live healthier.
Casper, you know who's the ones that are on the plane with the bags of Cheetos? Those are the ones that are in their cubicle at work talking shit about these college kids.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're called Cheeto Fingers.
We call them Cheeto Fingers.
And we make fun of Cheeto Fingers a lot on this podcast. So I'm glad you brought those guys up.
Yeah, they drive me nuts, man. And hey, I mean, Kyler, I don't know if look, now he probably has 60,000 views. So there's so many like cool things about social media. And so, but yeah, those Cheeto Finger, you know, son of a bitches that do that type of crap, it drives me nuts, man. But that's what makes the world, I guess, run, and that's how it works. So
to have people that are really great and have awesome mindsets, you got to have the people that are on the other side as well. That's how I look at
yeah.
it.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. That is true. That is 100% true.
So we're not going to take up your whole day because you got to soak up that Arizona sun. It's beautiful out there. Just looking at your screen.
Yeah. I'm out of the sun right now. I'm in the Ramada area.
Your son in this era of NIL is going to be, it's interesting, man. Like, kids can now make money. How are you approaching that as a guy who, well, you had none of those opportunities. You had to wait till the league to even see a lick of money. But now Kyler's going to have an opportunity as an 18-year-old kid. You can share what you want, but how do you approach that as a parent who's trying to make his kid go to the right decision, but also, you know, consider where you can get your worth, but balance all of that? That seems fucking crazy to me.
It is. It's so weird because now, besides saying, hey, we see you as a, you know, three and done, we see you as a receiver that we're going to move in and out, we see all these different things. So that's talking about the X's and O's and how much they're going to love this campus or that campus or the, whatever it is, the following. Now every school has a pitch on, hey, you are a receiver that is going to be a big, you know, a big name. And then you're being 6'5", you're playing in, you're going to be a minority in that position. You know, sometimes it's good and sometimes it's bad. So these are things that are going to be, you know, they talk about, hey, he's going to be a very, very, very marketable player. So the schools in LA are, hey, we're in LA, we're the mecca of all this stuff. So that's their thing. Arizona, hey, we're in Arizona, you're a hometown hero. We're already thinking ahead. We're going to be planning this, that, and the other. You go to Iowa, it's the legacy of, you know, I play there, and then he's going to have a following. So it's just kind of interesting. It's in these things, like we've talked about it, and there's no way, these are going to be no factors of where he goes to school.
Okay.
That's it for sure. It's something that you think about in the back of in my head more so, because right now I'm like, literally when we don't really talk about it, he's focusing on playing at Willing. He's going to be a junior next year, so he still has time. Yep. And the good thing is he has junior year and then the senior year. Around this time next year, he'll probably decide where he's going to go, is what I'm assuming. But at least it's not like we'll get to see what 1 year, because there's going to be a lot of crazy stuff going on. Mm-hmm. I mean, like it's going to be, hey, if you're Adidas, can you wear Nike? If you're, you know, all these little things, driving cars and all this crazy stuff. So at least we're going to see what a year looks like. But it is kind of interesting that every school, Iowa, every single school has a program now that they're going to have somebody assist these student athletes. So they're not just saying, you know, I want a deal. I'm going to deal with every single person. You know, you got to be smart. You can't just pick every single person that offers you a $5 deal or a $500 deal. You got to be smart with it. So these schools, they all talk about, we're setting up the situation right now to assist these athletes by the time they get here, which I think is going to be imperative. And then having mom and dad be involved, I think that's an advantage for him, because I have a lot of connections and I've kind of been through a lot of the, you know, signing deals with different, you know, EAS and different supplement companies when I played, and, you know, doing stuff for State Farm and all these different places. And so I've at least have enough, I guess I know enough and then have enough marketing people and they, I can ask questions and now I don't want Kyler to worry about, oh my God, what do I, you know, I got a class and then we're playing you know, whatever school Saturday, I got to worry about trying to get a deal. No,
right.
You're going to focus on school and being an athlete and performing the best that you can be, not worried about what you're, you know, what deal you're doing, what autograph sign you're doing. So yeah. That's what you need to keep us focused on.
If I'm,
but
Kyler,
it is interesting, man. It's yeah, crazy. No,
it's wild. If yeah. I'm Kyler, the way I look at it is like, there's probably going to be money everywhere I go. So, you know, it's kind of, it kind of balances it out. Drake, you might have something else for him. The only thing I have left is the NFL Combine 5-10-5 record still stands to this day at 373 by by the one and only Kevin Casper. The 5-10-5 drill was my favorite drill at Iowa. I was 5'10", 220 pounds, and a long snapper, but I ran 3.99. So pretty –
you were 3.99?
Oh, yeah.
Holy crap. I mean, anything under four is impressive.
Yeah, I could fucking move.
Dude, especially for, not that long snappers aren't football players, but.
No,
but
they aren't.
Especially for a long snapper. I mean, no, seriously, that's really impressive, man. That's awesome.
Yeah, I appreciate it. It was me and Josie Jewell and even Drake and Bo and Ben Neiman and all the guys. We would go out and that was like our day, man. That was, it was time. And the legend, Kevin Casper, was on the board with his – I think he ran 3.77 at Iowa.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
And we were all – like, you were like this larger-than-life figure in the 5-10-5 drill. Like, we were always trying to catch you, and no one could fucking run that fast. When is that thing going to be broken? Is it ever going to be broken? And can you still run a 5-10-5 under 4 seconds?
Under 4 seconds, yeah. It would take me a little bit of time. A lot of it is a technique. And then I became obsessed with it to the point where even the night before, just being in the hotel, taking through my steps, walking through my steps, and then walking at the hotel to combine.
Yep.
And then just I spent so much time walking. I do a lot of like visualization, especially when I play, running routes in my head. I still do. It drives me nuts. But the 5-10-5 and stuff, I did so many times in my head that when I got there, and I think I told Drake this, but when I got there, I was about to run the 5-10-5, and I said, oh, just so you know, you're about to witness the all-time record. And they said, all right, Superman. I said, oh, and I went down, I come back up, and I said, oh, that's a good name for me. And then so I did it, and I ran through, and I said, oh, record. I'm like, you don't even got to tell me. All right, no, because I did it so many times. And like now, you know, when I think about it, like if someone did that, I'd be like, what a cocky asshole. And I was never – like I couldn't be cocky because I walked on. I couldn't be cocky because I was like a piece of crap, bottom of the totem pole when I got, you know, got to Iowa, and then, you know, being 15 players with Denver Broncos being, you know, drafted there. They said they went like this, five, and they said we're keeping five of you, and that's it. So I was the end guy all the time. So there wasn't like a huge cockiness towards me. It was just like I was very confident in my abilities, and so when I got there, I already knew that I was going to break it. So. So I did. I ran it twice, and I broke my record, then broke my own record. But then I went to vertical jump. I had the record too, 43.5. I had the record for about like 15 minutes, and Chris Chambers broke it with a 45. And since then, I'm number five overall, number one for the Caucasian species. But yeah, so
hold it down.
That's 40. Yeah, so that's all.
That's incredible. I did good. You are
What bothers me, the thing that pisses me off, like I still hold the 60-yard shuttle, which is similar to 20-yard shuttle, but obviously times three more, you know, times 60 yards. I still hold that, but they started, like my time is better than the all-time record, but they put it as a few years later, they started counting that as like as records because it wasn't as big of a deal. And I'm like, this is bullshit because I hold the record. So why would you, you know, not have that? So. But I hope every year, man, it's like the Miami Dolphins, like they sit there, they don't want to get that broken thing. I'm not that serious. I don't pop champagne bottles or whatever, but I don't want it to get beat. Cause then soon as you're second, you're literally irrelevant every year during the ESPN and all that stuff. They'll compare me to a squirrel or some weird random stuff. And my brother will send it to me. Like I'm 40 this year, I was 43. And that's what they did. They're like, you know, this is similar to what a squirrel would run. And then like, I'm like, I'm like, all right, whatever. But, you know, my older brother gets a lot of this stuff, and then he'll have people send it to me, sends it to me, and I just laugh. But then eventually, if you get beat, you're, you know, nobody's going to talk about it no more. So
Kevin, you know, the squirrel cast.
Yeah. Yeah. Seriously.
Unbelievable. Well, dude, yeah, you are, you're a fascinating person, and your family is fascinating, and the story, the legacy, the whole Kyler, everything, just everything about you. And I think the fans are really going to enjoy this episode, man. We appreciate so much you coming on.
For sure, man.
I heard that Drake got a second workout canceled because you had something come up, and I wish that you would have driven him into the ground again, because I love hearing Drake get his ass kicked.
Dude, it's coming, because now that I know that he'll actually, you know, at least push himself, I'm going to turn it up like times 10. And I can't wait. Like, seriously, like, I've been excited about it. And so, but the thing is, like, he, I know we're like joking and stuff, but he pushed himself so damn hard and he didn't say nothing. The only thing I told him, we talked before, we talked after, great dude. I was talking about like the whole Hawkeye thing, back to that, like the Hawkeye thing. It's, as soon as we saw him, I felt like we knew each other for a while, because we've been through, not just walking on to Iowa, but being part of the Doyle program, being part of, being led by Coach Ferentz, being part of Hawkeye, running Kinnick, like all that stuff is just awesome. So you become friends with a guy like really, really quick. So I felt like I knew him already. But the only thing I had to tell him was, dude, don't spit or throw up on my turf, because it's turf, not grass. So he told me later, like, that's what he was focusing on, not making sure, you know, he didn't throw up on my turf. So that was a kind of funny story.
So he told me we had two sets of prowlers and it was gonna be two sets of 10, right? I almost make it through the first set without getting sick, but couldn't. So then in between sets, I have enough time to spit up what's in my stomach, get a drink of water, and get back on the prowler for 10 more with more weight on them. And it was, let's just say that I looking forward to seeing what your sick mind has in store for me the next time, because
it's not going to be on my turf. I'm going to have you on turf that you can throw up on. So that's why. That's my next plan. So it's right down the street from me. So,
oh man,
it'll be you don't have to worry about it.
Well, you
know, but it's gonna be fun. I enjoy working out with you, man. It was good.
Yeah, yeah, same.
I gotta get in on one of those sometime.
You should, man.
I will. Kevin, unbelievable. Thank you so much.
For sure, this was my pleasure, man. I listen to all you guys, all your podcasts. I mean, you talked about before, but when you said, you said, hey, this is, you know, Tyler, Drake, and all, whatever, from Washed Up Walk-Ons. I'm like, dude, you really don't have to introduce yourself. Like, I listen to you guys all the freaking time, and I do. I love your podcast and just your passion for it, Iowa Hawkeyes and the team and all that stuff. Like, that's, there's nothing better, man. So I always enjoy it. That's why I do a lot of time when I'm working out, instead of just listening to the same music all the time. I just listen to one of your podcasts or some other type of podcast, you know, just to get me kind of motivated, fired up, whatever it be.
Well, that's, we appreciate it, man. That's kind words. And that blows our mind, kind of. 2:30, Kevin Casper. Hope you guys enjoyed it. We'll be back again at some point with somebody else, but this was an all-timer. Peace. Mm-hmm.